It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Vary Show is on the air.
I read a post by a supposed journalist who made the point that school choice is bad for Texas kids. Interesting. How on earth could that be? Giving a child, not every child is the same. Some kids are going to learn better with homeschooling, and some kids are going to learn better in private schools, and some kids are going to learn better going off to an academy, and some kids are going to learn better at the local public school. Well, why wouldn't we understand that what's best for the kid should be the decision of the kid and their parents? Why should we take away their choices? Mandy Drogan is the Texas State Director for the American Federation for Children, which seeks to empower families, especially lower-income families, with the freedom to choose the best K through 12 education for their children. Mandy, why do lower income families especially not have that freedom already?
Well, thank you for having me, and great question. School choice benefits all families because, as we know, parents love their children more than any government entity, any institution ever could. But particularly for the low-income and minority students, who are often the ones that are sent to the failing schools, their parents have no option to remove them from those schools. There, it's dictated by government zoning, as we all know, and you're given a school that you can go to, and that's it. And if it's failing, these parents realize, I have no way out. I can't just pick up and move and go find another job, or I can't afford to go find another place to live, or this is where my family is, where that I have support and childcare. So there are so many reasons why families in the low income and even the middle income spectrum, they cannot choose the school that would best suit the needs of their children. And Michael, you're right. Every child lives and learns differently. And so enabling parents to select the school that will best serve their child is how we serve Texans.
Well, and it's been my experience serving on Houston City Council and visiting a lot of schools that, by and large, the poorest performing schools are in the poorest socioeconomic neighborhoods. And you can track that with regard. It's not a funding question. It is large. With Robin Hood in Texas, there is relative parity, not exactly, but it is the fact that kids are coming to school without a father in many cases. It's the fact that kids are coming to school without having eaten. It's the fact, and teacher, you know, I have a number of friends whose wives are teachers. It just turns out to be the case. And they talk about how their wives get so invested in these kids that the kid's going home to violence or neglect or privation. And they take it so personally because they care so much about these kids. You have a higher percentage of kids in those circumstances, which makes it harder to perform in school. You have conflict resolution problems where there aren't parents actively parenting. So you're in a poor neighborhood going to a poor school, and all you're asking for is the opportunity for your kid to go to a better school. Why on earth would we deny that?
I do not know why we would deny that. I'm right there with you, and you're correct. I have several friends and family members who teach in the school system, in the public school system, and they say the same things. School choice enables the schools to also be able to meet the needs of each child and where they are. A perfect example of this is if we can turn our heads and look over at Florida, who implemented the tax credit scholarship program about 20 years ago. And that program serves the low-income and minority families primarily. Their average household income at this point is under $38,000. And these students are able to come to these smaller schools, the private schools that are created to serve students that might come from backgrounds, come from home lives that need a different approach to education. Maybe they just need more structure. Maybe they need help with, and uniforms can help do things like that. There are so many different avenues where our education system can be crafted to serve each individual child. And we see it all throughout the country. We have 31 states, plus Puerto Rico, plus Washington, D.C., that have private school choice programs. And when you bring it down to that smaller level where the school and the parents pick the school and the school must answer and are accountable to the parents, that is when you really see children thriving. That is when you can really get to the bottom of these kids, particularly the struggling ones that come from difficult home lives, and we can cater the education to them and meet them where they are. So it absolutely blows my mind that we have people that are standing in the way of allowing each parent, each guardian, each caregiver to say, I know my child. I know what they need. They need this type of environment. And if that's a high-quality public school, which we have thousands of in Texas, and that's wonderful, then awesome. As you noted, we pretty much have parity on funding. The funding, to an extent, follows the child within their districts. But for those families that need something else, why would we not give that to them?
Corey DeAngelis has become a friend, but he's someone I've been following for almost 2 years now, and he has been focused on what we're talking about, which is where the funding would follow the student. Wherever the student goes, it's basically a voucher that you get from the taxpayer. Shouldn't be funding to the school. Why would we ever fund the end unit? Fund the student. That's what we do with patients. We don't just send money to hospitals and say, oh, treat a few of them and the rest of them, you know, neglect them. We give that voucher to the patient, and they get to choose who the healthcare provider is. But, Mandy, I want to go back to something you just said. The Florida program, you said they started 20 years ago. How does that program work?
Well, it is a business tax credit scholarship program. So they are able to, businesses, large corporations are able to allocate a portion of their taxes to this scholarship program. And these programs, these SGOs, scholarship granting organizations, then they help fund the students that want to go to something outside of their zoned school. And an interesting statistic on that, it's above 80%. I'm not looking at it right now, but it's over 80% of children zoned to, I believe it's Tampa Public Schools, choose to utilize the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship and go to a different school. That's amazing. But when you get to other districts that are providing the high-quality schools that have students that maybe have more support at home, they're going to the public schools. That's wonderful. So the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship is so successful because it really gets to the heart of a lot of our education problems, where that is able to tailor to each individual child. And we know that those kids that are zoned for poor performing schools in high poverty areas need an out. You should not be forced to go to a school where your needs aren't being met, where you're bullied, where you're not, because it's just, you're just being warehoused with other, I mean, whatever it is, the parents of low-income kids love their children just as much as every other parent, and they deserve the right to make a choice where their kid goes to school, and they have that right in Florida. And
Davis came to to Columbia Pictures Music Division, then known as Bell, in 1974. The $10 million investment reorganized the three labels and introduced Arista Records, which ended up with a lot of hits, but Clive Davis was a genius. But still under the name of Bell, hadn't officially changed the name yet. The final number one hit that label would have would be a breakthrough release in 1974, then in January of 75, it would go to the top of the charts by Barry Manilow. That was 1974/75. 42 years later, Barry Manilow comes out as gay. Yeah, Barry, we all know. No, but I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all. That, no, we've known for a long time. We figured Mandy was really Andy. We know. No, nobody is surprised. And more importantly, nobody cares. And oh, by the way, Suzanne Somers came out 3 years ago after your wedding to a dude and talked about the vows y'all had for each other. We pretty much figured that when Suzanne Somers said she was at your wedding to a dude and this was your vows and she really thought it was a beautiful thing, that at that point, you might be homo. Yeah, yeah. Well, I just want y'all to know, okay, I want to get it out there. Yeah, yeah, Barry, we've all known forever. We do not care. Well, if y'all have questions or anything you want to ask, or, you know, I know this is a, he said at the time, I know this will be a huge shock to my female fans. Not one bit. Not even a little. Next, you're going to tell me that Elton John's gay and that Freddie Mercury, you don't, and Liberace? Oh, my goodness. Who could have ever guessed? Wow. Shocking. Just shocking. Gas prices hit record highs yesterday. According to the AAA's gas price calculator, the national average cost of a regular gallon of gasoline hit $4.52 early this morning, topping yesterday's record of $4.48, which in turn had beat Sunday's record of $4.47. That might sound like a small incremental increase, but that's in 2 days. That's a nickel increase in 2 days. The trend is not good. 447 on Sunday, 448 on Monday, 452 on Tuesday, today, this morning, which means by tomorrow. And by the way, this is the average price. This isn't a spike due to a shortage in one community, or you could say, well, they didn't get their delivery. This is the national average. If you know anything about statistics and how to calculate them, for the national average to increase like this, Fox Business reports the price comes as the European Union edges toward oil sanctions on Russia amid the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. It also comes amid record-high inflation, with the Consumer Price Index reaching 8.3% in April, hovering near March's 40-year high. The White House is trying to blame Russians and Putin for the spike, but gas prices were rising even before Russia invaded Ukraine. Within his first week in office, Biden signed an executive order temporarily suspending new oil and gas leases on federal lands. The administration resumed the new leasing last month following court challenges against the ban. The administration is appealing a ruling in which Judge James Kane, a Trump appointee, struck down that ban. Biden's Department of the Interior canceled an oil and gas lease sale for over 1 million acres in Alaska's Cook Inlet last week. Steve Malloy, a former Trump-Pence EPA transition member and founder of JunkScience.com, says Biden has basically, quote, scared away investment in oil and gas. If I told you that I could get you 1,000 acres for $10,000 in Rwanda, your answer would be no without needing to go do any due diligence. They've been in a civil war for a very long time. Or South Sudan. Or Mogadishu, Somalia.
What?
Djibouti. No, Djibouti has relative stability. If I told you that, you'd say no thanks. Because the lack of stability and consistency chases away dollars. Investors want consistency and stability. And that was always the hallmark of the American economy. Whichever party won, you knew that there wouldn't be tribal warfare against the other party. The left has changed their tactics. They've been overtaken by the radicals. Most Democrats are not radical nuts the way they're acting today. They're scared to death of the fringe. I have a friend named Justin Dupuy, and he told me back in 2015 that Bernie Sanders would be the Democrat nominee in 16. And I was busy or tired or annoyed or didn't want to hear what someone else had to say about the matter. And I said, Justin, that's just stupid. Don't send me opinions anymore because that's just stupid. Well, Bernie Sanders came in a very close second place to Hillary Clinton. And but for her cheating through the Democrat National Committee, through Debbie Wasserman, which has been verified, Sanders would have beaten her. He would have beaten her. He would have nosed her out. That was when I realized the Democrat Party, see, in order for Obama to be elected in 08 and reelected in 12, he had to pretend to be a moderate. He couldn't say he was going to be a radical leftist. He had to couch everything in terms of moderation, talk of bipartisanship. Now, once he got in, like Castro, talking about what he would do for Cuba and then doing quite a different, or Chavez in Venezuela. But the moment that they no longer made the pretense that they were moderates, in 2016, see, Hillary was actually doing better with Republican women than you would expect because she was pushing for the first woman. Girls, we got to stay together. And, you know, we might disagree on some things, but we're in this together. I don't know when our break is, Ramon. Issue is price of gas at the pump. So the immediate reaction of Democrats is, well, government has to do something. They have to lower the price. But government doesn't set price. The marketplace does. When government sets price, they have to set price before consumption, which is a very inefficient way to set a price. Thomas Sowell has a chapter in his book on the concept of central planning versus capitalism, the free market. And he talks about the extent to which central planning in the Soviet Union ran everything they did, which sounds like a great idea. The government will decide how much of everything we'll make. That way we'll never have a shortage of anything. So they decide that what they need it's going to be a cold winter, so we're going to increase production of beaver pelt. So they do. But it turns out the winter wasn't that cold, and now they were left with a lot of beaver pelt. And they dump the beaver pelt. at a very, very low price, which didn't recoup what the government had spent on it. Because the marketplace didn't tell them they wanted that. Central planning did. But in order for central planning to make that decision early enough that the beaver pelts could all be harvested, cured, and sent out to the marketplace, to the various outposts in the country, it was so early that they got the weather wrong. Pricing is how we communicate. It's important to understand this. Pricing is how we communicate. For instance, if you walk into a burger joint and they're asking for $10, it's posted up on the wall, $10, burger, fries, Coke. If you don't like that price, the answer is not to beat up the guy behind the counter or shoot him or cuss him out. The answer is to leave. And when enough people in the marketplace communicate, that's an unacceptable price, the price will come down. It'll come down to the point where going below that would make him unprofitable. He may even go below that if he's got spoiled inventory that he's trying to recoup something for. When you take pricing out of the marketplace, you silence the communication between the two parties, the buyer and the seller. A lot of people don't want pricing to be set by the marketplace because they won't like the level of pricing. People want to be able to buy things that they can't actually afford. And they figure the only way to accomplish that is for the government to set the price. So the U.S. Congress will vote this week on legislation banning, quote, excessive or exploitative fuel prices. Oh, okay, that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah, people shouldn't have to pay too much. You can make a little profit, but not a whole bunch. We don't want you to make a bunch of profit. Don't gouge us. I hear this often. Price gouging. It's the dumbest thing ever. Can't have price gouging. You going to the Super Bowl? Oh, no, man, those tickets, you see how much they're going for? Isn't that price gouging? But we'll allow price gouging at the Super Bowl because it's a real interesting story, right? What about the tickets to see, Miley Cyrus or the Eagles? Is that price gouging? I mean, surely it can't cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars to go into the same Toyota Center that you could see somebody else for a third or a quarter of that. Isn't that price gouging? What if you were to put a limit on what the Toyota Center or whoever the promoter is could charge for a ticket to the Eagles? Well, do the math. 15,000 seats. You can only charge $10 per seat. That's $150,000. Well, the Eagles charge $1 million a concert. So there will be no concert. Now, if you said, I'd go see the Eagles if the ticket was $10. The promoter says, if the ticket's $10, I can only make $150,000. I can only raise $150,000. That's not enough for the Eagles to come. The Eagles will turn down that date, so they won't come to this city. Okay, well, I'll pay $20. Would that be good? It's only $300,000. I'll pay $30. I'll pay $40. I'll pay $50. I'll pay $60. I'll pay $70. At $70, you get to $1 million. Okay, I pay $70. And then you'll have enough for the Eagles to come here because it'll be $1 million. Well, but I didn't get to communicate to you that the Eagles were coming to town. I have to market. It's going to be a $200,000 marketing budget. So you got to pay $80 to incorporate my expense of marketing. Okay, I'll pay $80. All right. Well, I won't be able to have any security there or any staff to take tickets. And the city says I have to have, you know, exit routes opened, have to have ambulances, police officers, have to have ticket officers, have to have somebody to serve you the food. So that's going to cost me X. So it's going to be $90 a ticket. Well, I just really wanted to pay $10 a ticket, which means you can't afford to buy that ticket. So this give and take of the conversation in pricing, as price moves, the market and the buyer and the seller are communicating with each other, not with words, but with numbers. It's like smoke signals. We have the Pope. We have chosen the Pope. Here is how the price fluctuates. That fluctuation is healthy. Go buy an OP, Ocean Pacific shirt today. It's not what it used to cost because the market is telling the seller, we no longer care for that product the way we used to. When a price goes up, it means, unless demand's gone down, it means there's a greater demand, unless supply's gone down, it means there's a greater demand for the same product. So when Congress gets involved and says, we're going to cap gas prices, guess what's going to happen? Gas shortage. Song, the intro song for the short-lived Dennis Miller show. I thought it was a very inspired choice. Dennis Miller just oozes cool. The problem that he learned, and I don't say this to flex, I say it because it's true, because Whoopi Goldberg learned it, and Alec Baldwin learned it, and a lot of other people have learned it. Just because you're good in one medium doesn't mean you'll be good in another. And long-form radio is a whole different beast than stand-up comedy or being a great guest on the Bill O'Reilly show, which he was. His one quick quip, which he would roll out on his radio show, would then be a pause in him going, oh, I got 8 more minutes in this segment. That was kind of the zinger. I really want to talk about gas prices, and I have some great audio to go with it, but I'm going to push that till the evening show because I want to test out our phone lines. Ramon, I'm going to engage the lines this time. 713-999-1000 is our new phone number. 713-999-1000. How do we have a caller whose name is unknown? You hadn't screened it yet. Okay, all right. We might need a work-from-home screener now. Brian?
Yes, sir.
You're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead.
You are the man. Wow, I've been waiting for a long time. I'm finally through. I get to speak to the czar of talk radio. Love it.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So, yeah, I was wanting to talk, you know, great program. I'm new to the show. I moved here about 2 years ago. I'm a refugee out of California. I wanted to be around like-minded people. And, you know, everything that you bring to the show and, you know, everything, you know, from your guests to your you know, to what you guys talk about every day, it's great, and it's a breath of fresh air to be in a state, in a community like this, and, you know, it's treated me very, very well, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, my man. I really appreciate that. I hit the delay and lose him and see what happens. You know what, Brian? Brian?
Yes, sir.
We're doing this live on the air. Can you count to 50 for me?
Sure. Should I do it now?
Yeah, do it now. We're testing our system live.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18.
Did you dump it?
19, 20.
He's still on.
21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. 29, 30, 31, 32.
All right, so see if they, as long as they didn't hear it, then we would put him on hold and we'd go to the next caller. Okay, I got it. All right. Yep. Okay. All right, so we won't know if it was dumped or not. That's kind of weird. All right. All right, 713-999-1000. Caller, you're up. It feels like 1970s radio. Caller, you're up. They wouldn't have their name. Yeah, east of the Rockies, you're up. If your phone number is 2... Oh, let's see. I guess I can't give out his phone number. So some goober's on the air and doesn't even realize it. Huh. All right, Ramon, can you screen that call right there? Let me just say this because I'm going to save the gas price discussion for this evening. But it's actually a really, really good case study because it's a commodity which means the price fluctuation can be immediate. It is a commodity that is used by a lot of people. Now, granted, the commodity is washed before it gets to us. It's refined. It's blended. There are things that have to be done. But it's really not so different than apples or milk or oranges or bananas or avocados. It's not so different. And it's something that all of us need. And it's not something that if we don't have, we do a workaround. I mean, we even survived without avocados a couple of years. And I still don't know how we got through that. I can't imagine living a life without avocados. I wonder if any other region in the world eats as many avocados as we do. Because between guacamole and just straight up avocados, when I learned a few years ago that one of my favorite things in the world, the avocado, was actually good for me. It's a good fat. It's good for your skin. It tastes good. It's delightful. I'll scoop it right out of its shell. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. But what I love about the gas discussion is it's something that people can see immediately. If you limit the production of gas, you're going to therefore limit the supply, which is going to immediately spike the prices. And people can see it. They can see it immediately. And that's when, if you're going to try to control the price of gas, and I'll spend some time on this evening, by limiting, quote, exploitative or excessive gas prices, you're going to discourage people from buying gas that they can't recoup the price on, and that's going to create gas shortages. If you don't allow for price to be the important something is to us, and all of us can get as much gas as we want whenever we want it, than someone who prioritizes, but I have to have gas. Oh, you want to do a conference call? What will that mean? We'll have two of them at the same time? Okay, Sharon, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Julie, you're on the Michael Berry Show as well. You talk.
I'm testing out the new phone system as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is working really well. Okay, all right. What do we do now, Ramon? Julie, what did you call about?
Just a call to tell you hi.
Oh, that's nice. It works.
No, thanks for being on the air today.
Well, there you go.
It works.
It works. It's without belaboring the point, because we sit in a studio and make radio. It's not the hardest thing in the world. But like a lot of you, when you move offices or move homes or get a new vehicle, all of your little gadgets that are muscle memory reactions are different. You know, when I get into somebody else's car and the transmission is no longer to be felt on the tree, and you're down here pushing buttons, I can't do that. And now I think it's BMW or Mercedes or maybe both of them. They have a dial setting for the transmission. You're going in. A buddy of mine has the new Bentley SUV, and he said, "Here, why don't you drive it?" And you get in, and everything is counterintuitive. I like the old fashioned. When you throw it into drive, you want to hear the pop, 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 pop. You want to hear the linkage of that transmission. Anyway, we'll get it all figured out. Just bear with us. Yes, we are aware that the callers have a crackle to them. We're aware that that there's an echo sound. We're aware that mic doesn't work half time.